From WGCU News, this is Gulf Coast Live. The CDC's HIV surveillance report ranks the Fort Myers Cape Coral area 16th in the nation in 2013 when it comes to the number of new cases of HIV. We're taking a closer look at living with HIV, treatment options, and targeted public education efforts aimed at addressing HIV in Southwest Florida. Plus, the campaign to raise the minimum wage to $15 an hour has been gaining traction around the country recently. The bill proposing a $15 minimum wage in Florida was one of the first measures filed for the state's 2016 legislative session. We'll hear from supporters and opponents as we explore the pros and cons of raising the minimum wage. First, this news. Welcome back to Gulf Coast Live. I'm John Davis. Thanks for joining us. The campaign to raise the minimum wage to $15 per hour has been gaining traction in recent months in New York, California, and elsewhere in the country. Last week, the Service Employees International Union held a series of rallies in cities around Florida advocating for a $15 minimum wage. Democratic State Senator Dwight Bullard has reintroduced a proposal for Florida's 2016 legislative session calling for the state to do just that, raise the minimum wage to $15 an hour beginning in 2017. Bullard sponsored a similar bill in this year's legislative session, but the proposal never received a committee hearing. At the federal level, congressional Democrats are getting behind an effort to raise the federal minimum wage to $12 per hour by 2020. Supporters of raising the minimum wage say it would help close the income inequality gap and that raising the spending power of low-wage workers would be a boon for the economy. Opponents of the proposal, including Governor Rick Scott and the Florida Chamber of Commerce, argue it would limit employers' ability to hire more workers and in some cases would result in workers being laid off. Joining me now for a closer look is Kurt Bradbury. He's communication manager for CareerSource Southwest Florida. He's a former small business owner here in Fort Myers and has previously served as director of business development for two Fortune 500 companies. Kurt Bradbury, welcome back to Gulf Coast Live.
Thank you very much.
And we're bringing other folks into the conversation as well here shortly, including New College of Florida Professor of Economics, Dr. Richard Coe. Also speaking with Carrie Blackwell-Husey. She's Executive Director of United Way of Charlotte County. Also speaking with Florida Gulf Coast University Economics Professor Dr. Dean Stansel. And we'll be speaking with John Patanovic. He's an employment law attorney with the firm Henderson, Franklin, Starnes, and Holt, PA here in Fort Myers. And listeners can join our conversation as well. If you're a minimum wage worker, if you are a minimum wage worker, what would raising the minimum wage mean for your and your household bottom line? If you're a business owner, how would raising the minimum wage impact your employees and your ability to continue functioning? Connect with our guests with a phone call to 877-GCU-TALK. That's 1-877-428-8255. Send email to gulfcoastlive@wgcu.org. Post comments and questions on our Facebook page at WGCU Public Media or follow the live Twitter chat using the hashtag GulfCoastLive. And Kurt Bradbury, just to start with you, when we're talking about minimum wage earners, who are we talking about? Is this primarily younger folks perhaps entering the workforce for the first time, or is it really across the board?
Well, it's predominantly younger workers. Of 128 million wage and salary workers in the United States, really only about 0.2% are paid at the federal minimum wage. And the predominant makeup of that is teenagers, young adults, and secondary earners, of which another earner in the household is may or may not be making minimum wage. About 17% of minimum wage workers are single breadwinners in a home with other people in the house.
All right. Tell us just a bit also first, before we get into this, a little bit about CareerSource Southwest Florida and sort of the help that you provide both job seekers and employers here in our area.
We have, and to preface, there are three stakeholders in this. There's the employer, the employee, and then there's societal concerns. So a pro for one segment of that of those stakeholders is maybe a con for another one. But what we do is offer training and employment services for job seekers And we try to fit those job seekers with job openings offered by the employers who post jobs with us.
Okay. And Dean Stansel, we have you on the line here, economic professor here with Florida Gulf Coast University. I understand you wouldn't necessarily support raising the minimum wage here. Tell us a bit about your position.
Sure thing, John. Hi, thanks for having me on again. Look, we can all agree that low-skilled workers face enormous disadvantages in labor markets, and we really ought to do something as a society to help them. Unfortunately, this policy prescription that we're talking about today, which would nearly double the minimum wage, would put these workers at even more of a disadvantage. And really, it's basic economics 101, John. My first semester econ students who are actually taking their final exam tomorrow, they understand this. It's called the law of demand. When you raise the price of something, people will buy less of it. It doesn't matter whether it's ice cream or donuts or low-skilled labor. Raising the price of low-skilled labor is going to result in fewer low-skilled workers being employed than otherwise would have been. So it's going to harm many of the very people we're trying to help with this policy.
And Dr. Richard Coe, we'd spoken on this subject more than a year ago on this program. The last time we had spoken, it was shortly after you had added your signature to a letter, along with more than 600 other economists around the country, in support of, at that time, a three-step incremental minimum wage increase. Do you still generally support the idea of raising the minimum wage?
Oh, absolutely. I just caught the end there, the last comments. I assume that's Professor Stansel.
Correct.
Who was speaking. And, you know, law of demand goes a lot of ways, and there's a demand curve could be very flat. It could be very steep. And the consensus evidence on the effect of increasing the minimum wage on the availability of low-paid jobs, minimum wage jobs, would indicate that a 10% increase in the minimum wage would result in about 1% reduction in minimum wage jobs. That would mean that 99% of the minimum wage workers are getting a pay increase, while there would be 1% fewer jobs. And that, you know, that's to me is a decent trade-off, especially when you look at who's benefited. And I was just looking at some of the studies trying to predict the effect of Obama's proposal to raise the minimum wage to $10.10, and it would benefit one-third of the single parents in the country, 20% of the children, over 6 million people would be lifted out of poverty. These are all good. These are all the sort of things that we're looking for, and it's just no question that compared to at least the pre-1980 days, the minimum wage is well below in real terms what it was. And let's take the '60s, which is one of the heydays of economic performance in this country, when it was around $10 an hour. And that's really, I think, one of the motivations behind, you know, President Obama's $10.10 proposal. So, I mean, that's the historical evidence that we can be based on raises we've seen historically. $15 is outside the range of what studies in the past would have covered, and I think for a city like Miami, that might be pushing the edge a little more beyond where I would like to go. I think that's probably fine for a city in New York, where the cost of living is so high, in Los Angeles, San Francisco, some of those cities. I would need a little more evidence before I would go all the way to $15 immediately anyway for Miami. I'm not sure their cost of living is that far out of line, but certainly something in the range of $11 or so would have a lot of positive benefits and very few costs based on what we've seen in the past.
All right. And do you think that maybe there's some sort of maybe number between what's been proposed and $15? Like maybe $15 would be, I guess, the detriment to employers and the ability or the availability of low-wage jobs because of the high cost of low-wage labor would be too much. Do you think maybe there's somewhere, I don't know, some dollar amount somewhere that we maybe haven't quite figured out exactly where it is, where raising it would actually be negative overall?
Well, I think you can go too far. I don't think there's any question about that. Mm-hmm. And as I just said, I think the $15 from Miami might be pushing the envelope. I'd like to take it a little slower in increments. I'm very comfortable with Obama's increasing the federal minimum wage to $10.10 and then indexing it for inflation. I think that's a perfectly reasonable proposal. I think it's okay for high-cost localities to increase their own a little higher than that to correct for, you know, differences in the cost of living. I don't know enough about, I haven't done the research to tell you what that would imply for Miami. My gut feeling would be something around $12 or something like that, but I haven't really done the research to see how their cost of living compares to the countries and compares to the rest of Florida.
I'm going to just go to Kurt Bradbury here real quick, and then we'll go to you, Dean, okay?
As I was discussing, when there's a pro, there's always a con. The pro, there's been studies done by the Congressional Budget Office that if we raise the minimum wage to $10.10, that could bring as many as 900,000 people out of the poverty level. But on the other hand, those 900,000 people may now not be eligible for some of the federal assistance programs like food stamps, Medicare, Medicaid, and they may not be eligible for local assistance programs like we have in Lee County for rental assistance and transportation assistance. So you have to balance what that really means.
Right, right. Dean, did you want to say something?
Yeah, I wanted to. Richard made a real good point I wanted to emphasize a little stronger, and he talked about how the this increase we're looking at is much larger than what we've seen in the past, and so the evidence Richard talked about showing these small increases in unemployment stem from studies looking at much smaller increases in the minimum wage, so we really don't know what this nearly doubling it to $15 would do. We know that it's going to decrease it, and I was really pleased to hear Richard agree that you've got negative increase effects on employment. But the other point I wanted to make, and it kind of dovetails with what Kurt said a little bit earlier, is that although workers under age 25, and this is according to the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics, represent only about a fifth of the hourly paid workers, they make up nearly half of those paid the federal minimum wage or less. And the reason that's important is this is a very poorly targeted policy. Right, we can all agree that we want to help low-skilled workers, but this not only targets low-skilled workers, it targets high school students and college-age students that are earning, spending money so that they can buy nice stuff, right? And they're in families that have the income and the means to be able to afford that sort of thing. And so we're giving a benefit to people who really don't need it, and we could help these people in a variety of other ways by freeing up labor markets, for example. That if people want to enter labor markets in this state, we have the fourth most burdensome occupational licensing laws in the country. We're the only state other than California that requires farm labor contractors to pass an exam, and we're one of only four states that require interior designers to have a license. There are things like that government can do to remove barriers to make it easier for low-skilled workers to find work.
Go ahead, Kurt.
I wanted to weigh in on that also. You know, the Workforce Development Board and CareerSource Southwest Florida have a couple of those major stakeholders, employers and job seekers. And the problem with dramatically raising the minimum wage is that I believe the skilled workers and semi-skilled workers who now may not be in the job system, may not be looking for employment, would now enter the workforce, take some of the jobs that are traditionally given to unskilled workers and entry-level first-time job seekers, and there may be a decrease in the number of jobs available to the people who really that was intended to start at that lower wage and work up the career ladder.
And employment attorney John Patanovic, I wanted to bring you in now. Earlier today when we had spoke, you had made an interesting point about this proposal in particular to go all the way to $15 an hour. You were saying that this might not entirely be the goal.
Well, as I think anybody would recognize, in politics there's a great deal of negotiation, and this very same senator I think had been proposing and pushing for a $10, 10 cent increase to $10 and 10 cents. So I don't know if the $15 is realistic, and I don't even know if Bullard in Miami really would expect it to pass at $15 an hour. And just to put it in context, and maybe I entered the discussion a little bit later, and maybe this was mentioned, Florida at $8.05 an hour really isn't out of whack with the rest of the states in the country. In fact, it's one of a couple of dozen that offer a greater than the federal level of minimum wage. The highest, by comparison, we're at $8.05. The highest is, I believe, the District of Columbia at $9.50. So to put it in context, $15 would throw Florida way above, not only double itself nearly, but way above any other state in the country. Not necessarily a reason not to do it, but just to give you an idea of the disparity between Florida, which would be number one at 15, District of Columbia would be next with $9.50. State of California, for an example, which has a pretty high cost of living, I think we all would agree, has a $9 an hour minimum wage. One other thing, if I can quickly add,
sure.
With this going on and the potential for a higher minimum wage and the impact some of the speakers have discussed on prices and goods and jobs and that sort of thing, there's also something that happened not that long ago that President Obama and his Department of Labor not only suggested but is now going through rulemaking, and that's a proposed rule that would guarantee overtime pay to salaried white-collar workers that earn less than an estimated $50,000, about $50,000. That would go into effect next year. Currently, that threshold is about $23,000 an hour. So on top of the minimum wage increase, there's also going to be a greater or a good chance that there's going to be a significantly greater overtime compensation increase for employers. So in some respects, a double whammy.
All right. And I wanted to switch gears a little bit here and Carrie with United Way of Charlotte County, bring you into the conversation here. We heard Dean talking about, low wage earners, and the ones that are younger folks and perhaps still living at home.
Right.
But that's not necessarily the case for everybody. Some of them are household breadwinners, struggling to get by. Tell us a bit about United Way's ALICE report, that stands for Asset Limited, Income Constrained Employed. Tell us about that report and perhaps why United Way commissioned it and maybe some of the results.
Absolutely. The United Way commissioned the ALICE report last year in an attempt to get a better measure of poverty rates in the state of Florida. They did this in partnership with Rutgers University, and basically what the standing understanding was is that poverty in Florida was standing at around 15%. But the true magnitude of the financial instability in the state was shown in the ALICE report to be about three times that size. And we know that 45% of households in Florida are struggling. For me, and this is all very interesting, and obviously I am not an economics professor or an economics expert on any stretch, but what we know is that in Florida, 69% of the jobs pay less than $20 an hour. The majority of those pay between $10 and $15 an hour. So this conversation is obviously very important, but I want to suggest that there's a larger elephant in the room, which is that we are a service industry-driven economy, and we don't want to be distracted because the fundamental cause of low wages and lack of education and skills, we need economic development, and we need to make sure that we are acknowledging those families that are absolutely working but that are not able to make ends meet every single month.
Well, I think that brings up a good point as well, and I think it's been brought up a little bit either by Kurt here as well, and that's that if you do have folks who, if the minimum wage is high enough that they're no longer having to rely on housing assistance or food stamps or Medicaid or any of the social service safety net programs that we have here, that would maybe be a positive for raising the minimum wage that wouldn't necessarily be reflected in terms of how it would impact employers.
Right, right. And I agree with that. And I think what we need to do is we need to look at multiple ways that we can improve this. We need a flexible economy. We know that the earned income tax credit works. And we know that we need to do something about minimum wage because, as one of your, as one of the gentlemen already pointed out, you know, we are way behind inflation in the cost of living. So what's happening now really isn't working. So I think this is going to take a multi-pronged approach, and it's going to have to be something that is reasonable. I personally am not sure that the jump from $8.05 to where we are now to $15 is very reasonable in a small amount of time, but I agree that the $10.10 seems very reasonable because we have to be able to, people need to be able to make a living wage.
Right, right. Well, let's take a call from Chris in Tampa. Chris, welcome to Gulf Coast Live.
Hey, wonderful. Thank you for taking my call. I appreciate it. Well, I've traveled up into the Tampa area, so I've lost your station a little bit ago, but it's been great so far. I wanted to comment on a comment made earlier in the show by one of the economists who said that, you know, when you increase the wages, that eventually you're going to lose employees. And I was thinking that that might be a good thing. You know, maybe a minimum wage increase would be better for the consumer in a lot of ways. I know that, at least in my experience, you know, I've gone to Walmart or Burger King or McDonald's, and the people that you're hearing sometimes aren't paying attention to you. They're not really doing their job. And by increasing the minimum wage, having employers or allowing employers to be more selective as to who they employ, perhaps more things could get done. Perhaps more production would, you know, would take place. Perhaps even to the point where, you know, costs would go down because the amount of work and what is produced would go up based on the fact that a $15 an hour, I would have to say, you know, job that you don't have to have patience for would be a coveted one. Thank you.
Chris, thanks very much for the comment. Kurt, would you like to respond?
Yeah, during the heyday in construction in Southwest Florida, a lot of construction companies employed as many as they could hire at the time. During the recession, a lot of these companies trimmed, tightened their belt, and became more efficient because of that reason. That's when construction has peaked recently. We don't necessarily see a sharp rise in hiring in the construction industry because they reach an efficiency level where they aren't necessarily willing to hire more people. They'll take the additional jobs, but they're efficient enough now that they can do the work with their existing crews. And that's kind of what I think the caller was talking about.
Mm-hmm. Right, and I did comment there. One of the incentives that a higher minimum wage gives to employers is to increase the productivity of their worker to try to offset the higher cost, and also gives them an incentive to maintain workers and have less turnover, and it's an incentive from the worker part as well. And we've seen that, and that's better for employers. So there are some offsetting benefits, potential benefits to employers to raising the minimum wage.
John, I think that the caller pointed out an important unintended consequence of minimum wage and other sorts of costs on employers like mandated benefits and such, and that is the increasing automation. If you think back over, you know, your lifetime, your history of experience with the fast food industry, how it's changed over the years and how the customer does more now, how in some places now you don't even order from a person, you order from a touchscreen. And for some consumers, as your caller said, you know, that's a good thing perhaps. Maybe it leads to better service. But it's an unintended consequence, right? It doesn't help the worker who now doesn't have a job because they've been priced out of the market.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm switching gears just a little bit here. On social media lately, I've been regularly seeing posts comparing, say, what a fast food worker would make over the course of a year if they were making $15 an hour compared to what folks in other jobs make, like paramedics or even, you know, soldiers with the U.S. Armed Services. And the general sentiment of these posts is that, you know, people doing jobs like flipping burgers, you know, don't deserve to make as much or more than someone in a skilled position like a paramedic. Dean Stansel, I wanted to get your response to that kind of social media post.
Sure. I mean, look, I think that what the minimum wage does is it kind of cuts off the bottom rung of employment, the ladder of employment success. And what I mean by that is a lot of these burger flipping jobs, I did fast food when I was in high school, and these are jobs that are temporary. They allow you to gain important skills that you really can't be taught. Things like showing up on time, following instructions, being courteous to your supervisor and the customers. These are skills that every worker needs no matter the job. And if you cut off those bottom rungs of the ladder of success, you basically say, you guys can't get these skills. You know, go do something else. And so I think that the fact that these are not permanent positions for most workers is an important contextual way to look at it.
I would, if I could just interject.
Go ahead, Karen.
I think that that is, that used to be true. In my opinion, the average age of a fast food worker is 28. I think that the amount of jobs that we have available are service industry low paying jobs, and I think that's the problem. You know, it used to be that was the entry level position that you could do, and then you'd go on with your career. I think the reality is it's twofold. We don't have a ready and skilled workforce, and I can speak for our community and the work that's going on in terms of economic development, bringing important work here for people that are educated and skilled, that are high paying wages. It's a very difficult parallel action that has to happen, and it's a really long-term investment. The reality is that we are paying for people to exist and to live right now, and we're paying through what we pay for in goods and services, but also we pay through social and services like my organization, but also we're paying in taxes and everything else, because we're having to bolster the fact that folks aren't making living wages. We're paying one way or another. And to me, it's short-sighted not to pay folks a living wage so that they don't have to rely on food banks and on social services, and that's what's happening now.
All right. Well, we are coming up on the end of the hour, so we are going to have to leave it there for now. But thank you so much to all my guests who've joined us, Carrie Blackwell, Kurt Bradbury, Richard Koh, John Patanovic, and Dean Stansel. Great to speak with you all.
Thanks, John.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Kurt Bradbury is Communications Manager with CareerSource Southwest Florida. For more information on services for both job seekers and employers, visit CareerSourceSouthwestFlorida.com. Carrie Blackwell is Executive Director of the United Way of Charlotte County. Find more information online at UnitedWayCCFL.org. Richard Koh is Professor of Economics at New College of Florida in Sarasota. John Patanovic is an employment law attorney with Henderson, Franklin, Starnes, and Holt, PA. And Dean Stansel is an economic professor here at Florida Gulf Coast University. For more information on the show, as well as an archive of past shows, visit our website, wgcu.org/GulfCoastLive. To comment on anything you've heard on this or any edition of the program, send email to gulfcoastlive@wgcu.org. Thanks to my producers Luke Martin and Richard Chinqui. This is WGCU, Fort Myers, 90.1 FM, WMKO, Marco Island, 91.7 FM, and PR for Southwest Florida.